With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
We are back. It is Thursday, which means brand new episode of R2C2 time. CeCe getting ready to head to Tampa for spring training and the NBA trade deadline stuff heating up. So much going on. We got the perfect guest for today. One of my new colleagues at the Yes Network and the man who is the godfather of uninterrupted podcasts. The man who co-launched Road Trippin', Richard Jefferson, is hanging out with us today. We had such a great time with Richard. You are really going to enjoy this. First of all, he is a rising media star. His stories are unbelievable. You are going to love his Greg Popovich stories that he tells. We were dying. Plus, Richard's insight in general. This was so much fun. Definitely won't be the last time we do it, but it is the first. So here is Richard Jefferson with CeCe and me on a brand new episode of R2C2.
Carry 40 guys, so like it gets, you know, you have enough seats.
Yeah, see, that's what, you know, vets always get to be like, yo, this is my seat, and I get to pick who's next to me to a certain degree.
Okay,
right, like a 10-day guy be like, oh, anybody sitting here? And it's like, yeah, but that's Bron's seat or that's J Kidd's seat. Like, you don't want to sit right there. You know, like find another person to kind of like infringe on their space. That's a little different.
Yeah. Have you ever seen like a memorable interaction like that, Richard, where like a dude who was just like there for a cup of coffee or a minute was like really trying to get in with LeBron or J Kidd or one of those kind of luminaries of the game?
No, because if you're in that space, you're always a little too nervous, right? If you're trying to do a 10-day. Now, I've seen like a veteran guy that'd been around like 12 years that probably wasn't going to make the cut, but then was just like right next to there. You know, oh yeah, me and Jake, they gravitate towards guys that they know. So you see that, but that's the only way. No one's trying to hustle their way into the league. You can't befriend your way in. that's not like it could keep you around, maybe.
It'll keep you around. Yeah.
It'll keep you around, but like to get in, no, that's not the case.
Like if you're a good, you got to be like a, like if you're a dude who people like hanging out with, or you're a good teammate, or you're one of the guys, but you still can play, cool. We'll keep you around.
Yeah,
like,
we'll keep you around. You're a good locker room guy. You're a good teammate. All that stuff. And so I that's the only thing that might tweak it a little bit, but not very much.
Are you like? Have you guys ever seen, teammates that you feel like are fanboying a little bit with? Because you play with like a Jeter, let's say, or you with the LeBron, where you notice either people who are your teammates or maybe minor leaguers or whatever, fanboying a little bit, and you got to be like, whoa, that's not for here.
I mean, yeah, I'm not going to call nobody out.
Oh,
I've definitely seen that a lot.
Yeah, we're all fans, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
First and foremost, people need to understand, we are fans of the game. And then at certain points, it kind of fades away, mm-hmm. right? Like when you're your favorite hitter growing up, and all of a sudden you're throwing against him. The minute he gets a hit on you, you're like, man, screw him.
Yeah.
Yeah, screw that dude. I never liked him. You know what I'm saying? And I learned that early. I was, you know, you lose to the Lakers. Like, I was born in L.A., grew up a Laker fan. We lose to the Lakers, right? I remember going to the Indiana series, right? Because I was in college. Friend hooked us up with tickets. Go to the game, and I'm rooting for the Lakers. Yeah, I want the Lakers show to win. I wasn't a huge Kobe fan. I was more Shaq, but I was like, yo, lose to them in the finals the next year? I can't stand. Yeah. So once you get in it, it's no more.
It's no more fans.
There's no more fans.
I've definitely seen like where guys are like, yeah, infatuated with like a player, like following them around and shit. Yeah, for sure. 1,000% I've seen that. A lot.
Have you ever had to tell a dude like, yo, knock it off?
Yeah,
like,
no, you don't say anything, but other guys notice and you'd be like, dang, look at that. You know what I'm saying? Like guys notice.
I've seen guys come on and they wore a different pair of exclusive Bronze every day.
Oh, my God.
Every day.
Name names, Richard. Nah, name names.
Because they're homies. They're homies. So yeah, I know. But I get it, man. And they were younger players, right? Yeah. They were really young. And you get it, right? Now he's at an age now where guys at 10 years old grew up like idolizing him, and they grew up idolizing him this whole time.
So these guys are real fans.
Yeah, they're fans, and so they get there, so they're happy, and they just like and kind of the cool thing that I'll say is that, look, when they start wearing all the shoes and stuff like that, and they might not say anything, but it's like he notices and stuff, and we all notice because we just like look, come on, man. But the cool thing is, it shows that there's always been support. Like, I didn't buy all these in the last 48 hours. Like, I've had these. Always been my thing. That's kind of been the one redeeming quality there. It's like, yeah, no, he's a real fan.
There's always a fascination with what it's like to play with LeBron, and there are different aspects of that, right? And one thing people talk about is, like, it can be hard for some players to feel, like, confident and willing to do what they normally do on the floor because they can, like, be deferential, right? Or be afraid to, like, ooh, if I miss a shot, I'm upsetting him. He could have had that shot instead. Did you ever notice that from guys where it's like they have to kind of get comfortable with not being intimidated by playing with
it? Intimidated, I don't know, is the right word. It's just learning your spots, right? And regular season, playing with certain players in the regular season is very different than playing with them in the postseason, right? It's very, very different because how they're going to approach the games. Like, hey, this is all about the team. But once we get to the postseason, understand everybody needs to fall in line, right? And so it's like you're telling guys, I remember last year during, you know, the Cleveland playoff run, I did some games, and I'm out there kind of talking to different guys like, hey, look, when he throws that ball to you, that's your turn to go. If you turn around and don't like it and throw the ball back to him, your turn is over, right? Your turn is over. Your turn is over. And I mean that from a space of like, but man, I'm not getting shots, or I'm out of my rhythm, or, well, look, he throws that to you, go to work, right? And that doesn't mean that you got to go score, but that means that's your chance to get yourself involved. When he swings it to you in a situation, understand time and score. But if you start driving and maybe you make a play, maybe you drive, get two free throws, that's it. But if you kind of penetrate, look around, and then throw it back to him, you're probably not going to get that ball again in that possession, mm-hmm. right? And that's just how he plays. Like, in the postseason, it's a little bit more direct. But no, man, look, you won a World Series, right? Are there guys that you feel understand that moment? You don't want to be like, no, man, look, man, you're good. It's like, no, you want somebody that just understands the moment.
Yeah, you want guys to, like, feel it. And that's another thing, like, with this young team that we have now is, like, going through these playoff runs, like, they're getting that experience so that when we get to that, you know mm-hmm. what I'm saying, it's no discussion.
Yeah.
Where everybody knows what it is. Like, we just need to go out and play and do it.
Yeah, you don't have to talk guys up. You don't have to hype guys up and say, hey, man, this is your moment, man. Mm-hmm. Like, I know you haven't been playing. Now, look, if you got a teammate, a friend, if you got somebody that you're connected with and maybe they're not hitting the ball well or they didn't pitch well last series, like, that's where a veteran can come in and be like, hey, yo, man, do you know what everyone's record is in this series? 0-0.
Yeah.
Right? Like, those are things that have a good vet, you know, or like, hey, I remember, you know, my first time in the postseason. It took that's a great bet to have in that space. But yeah, you don't want guys that you're out there trying to convince, like, you belong here.
You got to encourage.
It's like, we're not talking about like a first round playoff run that is successful or a second round. We're talking about, like, we're trying to go all the way to the end and do something historic. So in that moment, it just takes a different breed of guy mentally to handle that.
That's what I think we've already seen with Judge. Like, that dude clearly is so built for these moments, like, from jump, from right homering in his first playoff game, where you're like, you just know he gets it. Like, he's not going to be overwhelmed. He's going to be at his best self throughout these games.
Yeah, for sure. But that makes everybody else – that gives everybody else confidence. Like, all the younger guys, you know, like Seve going through it and, you know, yeah. Sanchi going through it. All these guys came up together through the minor league. So to watch Judge – have success and be able to be big in those moments, it's going to help those guys too.
Did you guys have any, like, memorable conversations, Richard, after you were down 3-1 in those finals?
Hold on. Hold on. No, man, it was one of those things where I always tell people, like, you can never accomplish that if you're not completely locked in. Because guys will start planning their trips after 2-0.
Oh, man.
Right down 2-0.
They really will. That's not just a saying.
Yeah. It's just more like, look, I've been on teams, and maybe not in the postseason, or maybe that, like, maybe barely, where it's like guys are living in a hotel. Like, they've ended their lease. They're living in a hotel. They've shipped their cars, so they have a rental car. And then they just have two bags of clothes living in a hotel for the final week or 10 days.
But they all in.
They all in. Right? Now look. Let's look at the hustle now, right? The season ends like April 14th, right? So like that April 1st lease, it's like, yo, do I need another month? Do I need another month? Or maybe I can end this lease. And like you probably know, so I'll end this lease April 1st. And I'll just rent a car for 2 weeks, ship my car back home. Empty out all my stuff because that takes about anywhere from a week to 10 days. So
that
if you do
that last homestand,
like get it all out. I want it all out. I want to come home, pick up my bags, and go home.
Yep.
Right. And so you see guys, man, like that. I've seen guys like literally just be in a spot where, oh, we're down 2-0. That's where the whole conversation goes in the 2-0. Hey, we win game three. They don't want to get back on the plane. Like, that's a mental conversation. Do they know it's over? Do they really want to go and fight 4-0, right? And just for one game to get back on a plane and travel 4 hours to lose there and then just to kind of have that long, like, ride back home. Everyone's lost. Everyone, like, no, or we could just lose it at home and keep it moving.
And keep it moving.
Yeah. It's interesting because as a fan, obviously, right, or even as, like, an analyst, like, you'll think those things, and you'll wonder if there's actual meaning behind them. But it's interesting to hear the player's perspective. It's like, oh no, that's a real thing.
Yeah,
like,
that shit happened.
Yeah, like,
but he's right though. To be like down, you have to be completely locked in. Like we were down 0-2 in Cleveland in the ALDS, and nobody panicked.
Yeah,
like we weren't watching ESPN. Nobody was like, it was the weirdest thing. Like we knew we were gonna win that shit. You know what I'm saying? Like we knew we were going home. We had two at home. We were gonna be in front of our fans, and we felt confident. All we had to do was just win one at a time.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And you literally have to really be locked in, though. And I remember that time, like that's the time. You know, I watch everything. I watch a lot of stuff, and I didn't watch anything. Like it wasn't. We were just so locked in on like winning that game that day.
Yeah, that's one of the first things that goes is media.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like if you're smart, like you don't really ever watch it. You don't ever listen. Like you might be watching TNT, or you might be watching because there's 15 games on. But the further you get and there's less games on, you know that, you know, instead of 5% of the telecast talking about your series, it becomes 10%, then 20%. The further you go, it keeps increasing. So you know you actually have to stay further and further away from the television because you don't want influences. You don't want outside stuff. You don't want outside negativity or they're done or this percentage or this person isn't doing anything. So the first thing you do, turn off the media, right? And it's like, you know, not just social. I'm talking about like, normally in the locker room, ESPN on Beyond, and guys be watching PTI and eating burgers. And no, like the minute that all you things start to get a little weird, or the minute you're locked in, media is the first thing to go.
I get that, man. You don't want anything just like creeping in your mind that's different than what you want there, right? Like you want to be as locked in as possible.
So it's just so much information.
Yeah.
A lot of it's bullshit. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Like, it's filler.
It's filler. Like, yeah. You know what I'm saying? Half of that shit they say is not, you know what I'm saying? Nobody, it comes from nowhere. So then you don't want to be thinking about that stuff.
Well, think about it, man. It's the reason why we wanted to do a podcast instead of a daily show, right?
1,000%, yeah.
Because a daily show, you are required to create content, and that means making mountains out of molehills. It just does. I know from doing it on radio, it's like, whoa, this is a story, and you're thinking like, yeah, I guess it's a story, but like, yeah, well, we'll make it a story, you know, like it's, and it doesn't mean you're even necessarily saying stuff you don't believe. It just means you're embellishing, and that can just like make something into a bigger deal than it is.
Then it has to be, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And the hypothetical, you look at the Anthony Davis situation.
Yeah.
And now every, like the next week will be hypotheticals.
Yeah.
And that part's a little unfortunate, and look, the situation is, and the first, I think, 48 hours, you can talk about the situation, the reality of the situation, the repercussions. The next 24, maybe 36, you're sitting here, let's gather as much information as we can. Let's talk to the people we can. Let's bring in these people. After that, you know, 58-hour window, after that, everything else just becomes, it just becomes, well, what do we talk about now? This is still the biggest news. Nothing's happened. We can't just keep talking about. So you start to just kind of fill, and then you see the ESPN trade tracker. Hey, let's throw in these four things, which I'm not a big fan. I'm not a big fan of. It's like, look, what about hypothetically three teams? Like, would Giannis play in Oklahoma City coming up next? And you're like, guys, no, you can't do this because I get what our jobs are, and one thing that I'm learning in this media and wanting to contribute is that I want to bring kind of a fairness and a realness to it. It's like, yo, these people have kids, these people have families. All of a sudden, understand that there's repercussions. Like, everyone's asking people at my mom's work, what's going on with Richard? And now my mom is calling me, and what's going on? Mom, I don't know. Just don't worry about it. And you know, it never ever stops.
It never does. Like, it's crazy. But this Anthony Davis thing, I feel like it was all off season too.
Mm-hmm.
And then like, this is the first bit of actual news.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, this is the first thing that
people kind of foreshadowed it, but
yeah, this is actually like the first bit of little news. And like, it's been insane, man. And like I said it earlier, like, as a player, it's fun to see like these guys being able to dictate where they want to go and running the league and doing what, you know, kind of doing the moves that they want to make. But as a fan, it's annoying. Like, I don't want to hear Lonzo Ball say he don't want to play for the Pelicans. If we trade you to the Pelicans, you playing for the Pelicans. Like,
yeah.
I mean, you've been playing in the league for 2 years. You don't have any say in where you should go. You know what
yeah,
I'm
but
saying?
That's, like, that's the problem is he had say in the beginning. And look, New Orleans is a good place to play. They'll be the first ones to say that they're not L.A., they're not Chicago, but there's a certain type of flair. Like, that's my favorite city to go eat in,
mm-hmm.
right?
Oh, yeah.
When I land, absolutely. When I land, like, that's one place. Like, I'll order the gumbo at four different restaurants in a 18-hour window, right? So there's a lot of positivity about that town, and then connecting to the community. You've seen what the Saints have done.
Sure.
But, yeah, it's not L.A. It's not Chicago. But Chicago's not New York, you know? There's a lot of differences when you float around, and I think – some of these young guys might not have a lot of experience. Like I never left a hotel in Utah. Mm-hmm. Never left. I played in Utah 1 year, and I'm like, yo, this is a really nice place to play. It's a nice place to live. It's sunny. It's snowing. You can take your kids and go to Park City. Like, the fans are nice. You're the only team in town, so they're supportive. When you start breaking down, you're like, yo, I can see how guys can stay here a while.
Yes.
Like, yeah. This is a comfortable.
Eat at Valter's.
Yeah, Valter's is amazing.
Oh my
so
gosh.
Good.
Unbelievable Italian spot
yeah.
there.
Yeah, and it's like this Italian guy who's got to be in the witness protection program. he cooks way too good to just show up in Salt Lake City. It's like, something ain't adding up.
It's so crazy, too. He walks around, like, with his chef's apron on,
yeah.
and his hair is like a mess. Like, he is a character.
I've never been to Salt Lake.
No. My wife talks about it all the time. She's like, oh, do you remember that Caesar salad at Valter?
Oh, my God.
It's amazing. I kid you not. It's that good. It is that good. I lived here 1 year, 4 years ago, and I still remember the everything about it. And,
wow.
And that's what I'm saying.
But you would never know that.
You would never know that. Yeah. And that was the thing. It's like, I remember being that close to Park City and went up there, just drove up there for New Year's because we had 36 hours off. Drive up there for New Year's, hang out, go out. Sundance Festival is up there. So like at about 10 days in, I think it's January, 10 days in January. It's like a party,
yeah.
and it's like a real party, like a Hollywood party.
It just ended, right?
Yeah. So there's even culture there that people might not expect. So you can get surprised by cities, right? And I'd never expected that. I never knew that. And all of a sudden you play there. So it's just a different crew. Like you said, with fans, it is tough. And I learned that from being in the media now. You say something bad about James Harden, or you say something bad about, not bad, but the young core, and you give your opinion, and it's just like, don't you talk about James Harden. And you're like, wait a second. And then I have to realize, like, oh, you guys are fans.
Yeah. Like,
I'm used to having these conversations with my boys, with the media. Now the fans are now involved, and you're saying something critical about their favorite player, and they're not happy about that. Yeah. So it does take a little bit of getting used to in this whole world.
It's interesting what you're describing with Utah, man, because C and I were literally – just talking about this on the last episode of R2C2, how, like, that's why if you are a city that isn't on the initial preferred destination list or whatever, you might still take a chance because you know there's something about your culture and your organization and the city that you learn in a more intimate and attractive way when you're there than as a visitor.
I said if Toronto traded for AD and he played with Kawhi up there, he's not leaving. Neither one of them would leave.
No, Toronto's another underrated city.
Underrated city. People don't know nothing about
great,
that.
Great city.
The fans love the sports and, like,
They just love sports.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do. They do. Man. Yeah.
They really do. They love sports. They pack out the CFL games.
Yeah,
you know what I'm
saying?
They
do. Yeah.
They pack out everything. So
you've been watching a lot of CFL, bro.
Not since.
Weren't you in the clubhouse
before,
last year?
That was last year.
Okay, not since
football season started.
Okay, all right, gotcha. Oh, since the NFL started. You got back to that.
Jones
but,
true.
But I mean, actually, with AD, Richard, let's say if you're Toronto or if you're the Knicks or Brooklyn, whoever it might be, are you saying, like, I know this dude really wants to go to Lakers, but I trust that if he comes here and has the experience we expect, he'll want to stay?
Yeah, but that's understand you can believe in your experience and you can believe in what you offer, but there's also something of like, okay, this is a business. This is sports and entertainment. If we give up a ton of assets to give somebody, we will probably all be looking for jobs, right? Like, that's the risk. If you give up Porzingis and the 19 pick and Knox for Anthony Davis and Anthony Davis leaves, best believe you're going to be looking for a job next.
Yes.
So
yeah.
You're betting a lot to gain a lot, and you could look like a genius, but that's the thing. You know, I think here in New York, we all know people bet it all the time. It's like, hey, either we're going to be broke or we're buying a yacht tomorrow. So that's just kind
of,
that's the New York mentality.
But the thrill of the unknown is going to be great.
It's going to be great, but we're going to find out. And this meltdown is going to be watched.
Do you just expect AD to end up a Laker one way or another?
I this is my thing.
Yeah.
And I understand that there are rules and there's different things that go into play, but ultimately, if he were a free agent, he can sign there. He will be a free agent in a year and a half. He is telling the team where he is most likely, if he was a free agent right now, where he would go. This team, you can contact them and get as many assets. They'll probably give you everything for me, right? Or I could have just said, hey, I want to experience free agency and then leave, right? Like, because that's what he says. He's like, hey, I'm going to wait till after the season. I'm going to experience free agency and then I can leave. And then I'm a bad guy because you got no assets for me. Or I could tell you this super early and you can get a ton of assets and start the rebuilding process, you know, a year and a half earlier. Because understand his value now will be higher than at the trade deadline of next year before his expiring contract.
For sure.
So I totally agree with the idea that, like, hey, he's helping New Orleans out the earlier he tells them, right?
Yeah.
If he knows he's leaving, because he is more valuable to a team if they get two playoff runs out of him rather than one, right? Even if you were Toronto and you said, we don't know if he's going to re-sign, but guess what? We're going to have him this year, and we're going to have him next year.
Yeah.
Like, and maybe we'll also have Kawhi. If not, if we lose Kawhi, actually, it does make sense for them, right? If they thought it was something they need, which maybe they don't, but... Because then if they're like, if we lose Kawhi, we can always flip Anthony Davis then, you know, like, and then do a whole rebuild or whatever. But
yeah,
like, but maybe having AD there is enough to convince Kawhi to stay, whatever. But having said that, the one thing I'd say is if it isn't mostly motivated by trying to manipulate your way to L.A., wouldn't you just tell them privately instead of publicly?
I think sometimes the public pressure puts... and it happens with players. It happens in business. It happens in politics. Sometimes public pressure puts people in a spot to move. Now the world knows that I don't want to be here. Mm-hmm. And I'm not, I understand with me doing that, I'm taking on risk. I'm taking on heat. I'm taking on alienating a fan base. I understand that. But this is what I'll say. And you don't blame anybody. You don't blame anything. But Anthony Davis has been in New Orleans for 7 years, right? He's 25, about to be 26, I believe, this year. A great young player. They have two playoffs, right? The last year, they signed Boogie Cousins. They brought in Rondo. I thought that was a great team. That's the best team that they've had since he's been there. They don't re-sign Rondo. Boogie Cousins gets hurt. They don't even bring Boogie Cousins back. And it's like, look, sometimes there's different thoughts. If I have a generational player, I'm going to do whatever I can to keep him happy until he gets under contract, right? And it's like in that moment, you're just like, look, man, we'll do right by you. But here, look, we'll re-sign Boogie Cousins, right? Anthony, if re-signing Boogie Cousins, and this is where you have to talk to generational players, like, we'll bring back Rondo. We'll do this. We have a better chance of signing an extension. And if they don't, maybe you sign Rondo to a three-year deal. Mm-hmm. Maybe you sign Boogie to a three-year deal, $60 million, right? Let's just say it. So it's like you're not committing to him for 5 years or long-term, but we're going to give you something to keep you here because we want to keep the franchise happy, right? And they didn't do any of that. So here he is. And look, Drew Holiday, they have some talent. Mirotić was playing well before he got injured. So they have talent. But Anthony Davis is looking around. And it's like, dude, I want to compete for a championship every day, and like I know that getting free agents here will be difficult. It's time for you guys to try and move on and build a different franchise.
I understand that. 1,000%. Like, I mean, he's given them everything that he could.
7 years.
Is it? Do you think it's weird in those situations for his teammates? Like, let's say he has to play the rest of the year with them. Like, do you think he feels strange?
No.
No, I don't think so. No.
I think his teammates understand. And, I mean, that's just something. That's why when I was talking to you about that Pittsburgh situation, like, that was so weird and random when those guys were just commenting on his contract.
Yeah. On Le'Veon Bell. Yeah.
That was uncomfortable.
That's how you knew that locker room wasn't a good locker room.
Yes.
And that they had fucking problems because you don't speak on your teammates' contract. You never talk about your money, the money.
No.
If it's good, yes.
Congratulations.
You know what I'm saying? Well, congratulations.
I should be saying congratulations and proud. Never look at another man's plate.
You never talk about that. So, no, I mean, his teammates are fine. They're good.
Right. They're not.
They understand it. They wish that they could be in that situation to get traded.
But now,
you know what I mean?
But this is the other side of it. What about the teammates in L.A.? Right? Now, what are they dealing with?
Yeah.
Now they are dealing with.
Right.
What about the teammates in Boston? What are they dealing with?
That's a great point.
When the Knicks say that they would be interested, if you're a young player, like, oh, am I going to go to New Orleans?
Yeah.
Right? And that's the thing. And say what you want. Like, you were talking about Lonzo. He's only been there. But he's a 19-year-old kid. If someone told you this at 19 years old, he grew up in L.A., played for UCLA, he's playing for the Lakers.
You'd be panicking
two
too. Yeah.
Yeah, you'd be panicking.
Yeah.
I kid you not. Even going to New Jersey, for me, like, I was born in L.A., grew up in Phoenix, went to University of Arizona. I'm a West Coast kid. Houston is the team that I'm thinking is going to draft me. I'm going to be drafted somewhere between 10 and 14. I had no idea where Jersey was. It's not even a city. It's a state. It's a state. So I'm like, where is this located? Right? I'd only been to New York, I think, one time for the for the preseason NIT.
Okay.
We won that. No one cares. And so that was my only experience. And so all of a sudden, I remember getting off a plane and being all the jokes about dirty Jersey, and their team had never had any success ever.
Yeah.
So that's another red flag.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I'm going to the Clippers at the time, it was the Clippers of the Eastern Conference.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they're just there. The Knicks had been good for 14 straight years under the Ewing era. And it was just all of a sudden, I land here and I'm driving from Newark Airport. And I'm looking to my right, and I was like, wait, is that New York City right there? And I was like, yeah. And I'm like, well, where's the arena for Jersey? They're like, oh, it's like 10 minutes over here. I was like, oh, yeah, I'll be able to do this.
This will work.
Yeah, this will make it work. We can make this work, right? And then even when I signed my contract, they were like, yo, so, man, congratulations, man, big couple years. Where are you moving? You going to get a home in, like, Saddle River, or where are you going to go to Connecticut? I'm like, yeah, I'm looking in the 10013 area code right in Manhattan. They're like, you're going to commute? It's like, yep, yeah, that's about right.
So, that's right. You were on Tribeca early.
Early, 05,
early.
04.
Oh, wow.
04.
Like, that's really
Tribeca.
Early.
Yeah,
yeah.
It is early.
You could claim that we're recording right now in Tribeca.
That's what I'm saying. And so, and I stay at the Soho Grand. I'll tell everybody. But you know what it is, and you could test this, it's like sometimes when you go to a city or area and you're like, oh, this is for me, right? I love the Tribeca area. Back in 04, back in 05, it was because you could get a spacious place, you know, a traditional New York apartment where we're becoming harder and harder to find, right? Like, elevator opened up to the building opened up to the apartment. And I was just like, yeah, this is kind of, it's quiet at night because there were the financial stuff. So there was no restaurants down here. There was nothing. And all of a sudden, Jay-Z starts rapping about this shit. Now rents are up 25%. It's like, dude, couldn't he just gone to Dumbo early?
That's when I flew in, when I signed, and I went to Alpine. I was like, this is where I need to live.
This is for you.
Like, this is the perfect spot. Like, it reminded me of Cleveland, like Westlake, like. This is my home. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is what I know. Like,
I lived in
what
Westlake.
I've been knowing. Did you?
Yeah, I lived in Westlake.
Yeah,
Westlake is great.
Right?
I love
perfect.
Westlake. Yeah, right there next to
Look at you guys giving Cleveland burbs love
here.
I like it.
I feel like I grew up in Cleveland. You know what I'm saying? I got there when I was 19 years old. So, like, to be able to have that time there, like.
That's what I feel about
amazing.
Here.
Yeah.
I got here. I just turned 21, right? So, I went from college to here for 7 years, 8 years, and. Yeah, I felt like this was like a second home to me, right?
It's amazing, man. It is. And I love that Cleveland has received its proper due thanks to you too. Like, it's important. That city, you know, they
need it
some
time.
It was
a good city, man. I'm telling you.
Hey, you were chasing, and I don't mean this as a slight, you were chasing what Richard's team did there, right? Getting that city a championship.
Oh my God, that would have I mean, obviously, you know those people. You've seen those people, been around those people like that. I mean, just bringing those people a championship.
They are so starved.
Oh my God,
they're such good people. Man.
It's hard to even describe it.
You can't describe it.
They are such good people.
And that was the thing I didn't know. Like, I just wanted to win a championship. I was a mercenary. I didn't care. I didn't think that the game owed me anything, but I think I owed it to myself to just go chase one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm not a legacy player. I'm not a 10-time all-star for this team. No, it's just like Richard just wants to go play for a team that he feels has the best chance to win a championship.
Yeah.
So I go to Cleveland. And that was the play with Bron. I wanted to go play with the best player on the planet. They had a very good team. I saw in that finals where everyone got hurt, they lacked a little bit of depth between 6 and 10. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, that's my role. That's 6 to 10 every single day, show up, work hard, and give you guys what you need. That's my role. And I was like, it was a perfect fit. But getting there, I didn't know all the love that Cleveland had. I just thought it was a town that I would show up and leave and talk trash about, that I would never want to live here. And then now it's just the people there. We won it on Father's Day.
Yeah.
So it's like I still have kids and dads like coming out to me crying and just being like, yeah,
it's
just like,
it's a special place like that. Yeah. Like as far as sports, like they really love it. Like it's crazy. And those people will never forget you ever.
No, and then on top of it, we go the year we win it, we had the ring ceremony when the Indians are playing the Cubs in the World Series.
Yeah.
So it's like, it was just cool then to go and support, you know, Terry Francona, go support Tito and go, you know, he's a Wildcat in case you guys listen. But just to go and support them because I see what it meant to the city, and now the Indians are there and they're like, we're going to go from 0 to 2. What is going on? And it was, and it helped when, even when the Indians didn't win, it was still like, it's all right, guys. We'll see you guys next year.
But like in the order of like Cleveland sports is the Browns, the Indians, and then the Cavs.
Very true.
So like for the Cavs to bring the chip is huge. Like the Indians to win a chip, that city might burn down.
It might burn down.
And if the Browns ever make it to the Super Bowl, guys, that city will be on fire, bro.
Yeah,
I'm telling you,
they might go conquer other cities. It might be like the Crusades. We're like, where are we going next? We're gonna take Akron. We're gonna take Toledo, and it will all be Cleveland. Yeah, they're not playing, man.
Not even win the Super Bowl. Just go to the Super Bowl.
Oh my gosh, man. That is
it's so true. We talk about that all the time. That's one of the conversations that we have is like, okay, who owns the city? Right? Who owns the city?
Yeah.
Here, it's the Yankees, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
If I had to say anything, in my opinion, it'd be the Yankees. Then it would be probably the Knicks, and then I would say the Giants. Now, don't disrespect me. Don't get mad, Giants people.
I think that's accurate.
And I'm not talking about talent level. I'm just talking about if a team could pick a World Series, a Super Bowl, or a NBA championship, right, in the rank of order, they were like, man, I need my Knicks to win. Or, man, anytime the Yankees win the World Series, it just adds to who they are and what the city is about. But, you know, certain cities, like we say it in Boston. In Boston, like, I know the Patriots are legends right now, right? So it's hard to say anything bad. But Red Sox are number one in that town.
Right.
I would say Celtics are probably right there. They haven't had the sex, you know, the success that that the Patriots have. But if you were to just say, like, right now, which parade would they rather experience? It would probably be Red Sox, Celtics, and then Patriots.
Yeah. And the Bruins might even be in there ahead of one, right? Like, because you're right. It's different dynamics for different cities.
Yeah.
It definitely is. Is the Cleveland, when you go back to Cleveland, do you still get love like from people there? And is it like,
I just have to be very chill. Like, you have to go, when you go there, you just know that you're going to be, there's no privacy there. Like, if you go to restaurants, if you go to dinner, there is no privacy. Like, you check into the hotel, any you're going to be saying hello, and that's love. I have no problem because they don't understand how instrumental they were in the support of us to help us get that done. Like, game 6 was the best, to this day, is best game I've ever been a part of. They stood up the entire game. A college team, a college town, they stood up the entire time, right? And I'm talking about adult. I'm talking about they were cheering on the way in. They were cheering on the way out. They stood up the whole time. And it was just like, that was part of it. We were like, yo, guys, if we can win game 5 and get back, we're not going to lose game 6. Like, mm-hmm. these people, when you talk about rioting, like the officials were on their best behavior, right? They're like, guys, no. But I'm just saying the crowds can have that. The crowds, like when even for officials, they walk in and it's like, hey, I understand the magnitude of this game and I understand the magnitude of this situation. So I need to be on my best. Yeah. I need to be at my best. It doesn't mean best behavior, this, but just like, yo, I need to make sure I'm tuning out stuff. I need to make sure I'm locked in. And because of that environment, you get the best out of everyone involved.
That's awesome, man. What? Move on from the Cleveland situation a second, but like, Richard, we love storytelling. You know that.
Yeah,
like,
that's what podcasts are for.
Which, by the way, let's actually divert for a second.
We got the godfather
of the of the uninterrupted podcast network right here with Road Tripping.
When I called you about the podcast, I was like, "Well, Richard Jefferson is doing it."
Yeah. Exactly. Yep. And we were like, "Take a listen, see the dynamic." Yeah, you know, man. Well, no, exactly.
Somebody who will remain nameless was. Yeah, wait, you're going to go do the RCT? And I was like, yeah, you know, CC, but yeah. They're like, well, I remember you were a little, I was like, well, they gave me credit. Once they gave Road Tripping a little bit of credit, then I was like, all right, I have no problem
now
with
you're,
that.
Now you're good.
Now I was good. Now
yeah,
was good.
I do remember you tweeted at us a little bit.
Hey,
hey,
now, guys.
Yeah.
And that's the dad.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Well, because you're all, you know, you kind of stay
it was
away.
Your intro. Yeah. It was your intro. It was like the very intro. And I was like, yo, that's genius. Like, this is why we started that. We wanted to influence, and it's not that I want, you know, a hand in the pot, but it's just like, it's always cool when you stumble onto something and you see how cool it is and then other people pick up on it. Yeah. It's just like, you should, it's just no different than the pitcher that you watched or, you know, the broadcaster that you liked. You should always give credit to people that either influenced you or impacted you. So once I got credit, then I was like, all right.
But they get all the credit, because even when I was like, man, we need to do it on an airplane. Like, you know what I'm saying? We need like different spots. Like,
do you think we could do an airplane episode this year?
I don't think it'd be a problem at all.
That would be fun.
I think it'd be a lot of fun.
That'd be great.
The airplane one is good.
That's what I'm saying.
We had to stop it because there was one area because Allie Clifton, she couldn't come to the front of the plane. Like, that's players only, right? Like, coaches can come up there a little bit to say hello, but like media.
That would be like me. Like, yeah, I wouldn't be able to.
Media doesn't
go
there. So we had a middle area, right, that had some open tables that sometimes like everyone would converge on there to play cards if the staff or whoever. And then we set up like a recording station and it was okay at first. And then it just started, then guys just started coming back because they would hear laughs and they would hear whine. But that was also where like Steve Spiro and Cobra and all the trainers would kind of, these are the guys that do all the work that we don't see, right? Mm-hmm. So they are the last one on the plane because they're doing the bags. They're the last one to go to bed because they're doing the bags. So if that's their time to sleep, we kind of quietly got the booted out after like, after like three episodes, four. But we did it. We still accomplished it before they got pissed off. But the plane episode is awesome. When you can go from how we played last game to where we're going next and what's the conversation before, that's unique, man. It's never been done before.
And then you get like people popping in all the time. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. We need at least like one plane episode.
That's what I'm thinking. But I'm worried. But are you guys on the plane, you do the front of the plane, the players?
No, we did the middle.
No, how the plane set up, like how you guys get on the
front
plane.
Of the plane.
Front of the plane is
front of
players.
The plane, and then middle of the plane is normally training staff and coaches, and then the back is media.
See, we do it opposite. Coaches are in the front.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And then players are in the middle.
Which suck when we're on a regular plane, because then the coaches got the fucking first class. Yeah. And then we're stuck.
That's why they know what they're doing. They know what they're doing. And yeah, we don't travel as many, so it's a little different situation. But it's easy to set up, man. You got portable recorders with batteries. Yeah. You can do that and headsets.
We can
set
it right up on that card table with those guys.
Hell yeah, man. We can have it while you guys are playing high card. Yeah. Let that be the background noise,
man.
That'd be great.
And I'm telling you, that for fans to hear the joy, right? Or even it's like, yo, we lost a tough one. Like, I remember we had won a bunch straight and we went into Boston and played a great game. They beat us, but it was like a great game. Like, they hit a bunch of tough shots, contested, and it's like afterwards, like, we're bummed, but we're not depressed, right? And there's like a ton of media coverage and like we're going on to the next city. And so we do this and we literally drop it like 36 hours later, and everybody was like, this is what was going on in the plane afterwards. Yeah. Like they'd never heard that. And it blew my mind. I'm like, well, I can understand why they've never heard it, because no one's ever done this. But wow, the fact that like there's a new form of media that can give fans an experience that has never been even. Now, don't get me wrong, by like the third bottle of wine, like there was a lot more editing that was involved, but it was still fun.
That's good. Yeah, that's true. I could see that. Like where you want to just change a word or two, but that the access is so key, right? Like, because if you think about it, in today's day and age where there are so many options for fans to get their information, like, you don't break news anymore if you're a regular, like, radio host or talk show host or whatever, right? Like, that's, like, not what you do.
Yeah, it's all Twitter.
Yeah, exactly. Like, well, everybody's, it's out there already, right? Like, it gets out there, like, right away, and, you know, you just, like, it's done. You know, it's just not your function anymore. People consume their information from so many different places. What you really have to give them to make it unique is the access, yeah. Right? Like, that's something that they can't get from the 35 other writers they're reading, mm-hmm. who all cover their sport or their team or whatever.
Or
right?
Even,
like,
somebody that's on the plane that can't report it. You know what I'm saying? Right, like, exactly, they can't, yeah. Like, but it's coming from the players, then it's fine.
Right. Yes, you know exactly. I mean? Exactly. There's certain things you can put your stamp on and say, okay, now it's good that I can't. Well, dude, even like when we've talked about stuff on the plane, like, I won't even. It took you being like, we got a great group, we play this, right? Even if I say, see what you're doing on a plane, I don't feel like I can talk about that, even if it's in a fun. You need to be the one.
Yeah,
you know
what I mean? For sure.
Like, that's like, there's a certain respect. There are rules about that. But when you give them that access, that's the stuff that they eat up, yeah. Obviously, because you don't know it.
Yeah. You're not even really giving them, like, insight. You're not giving them insight on the game. You're getting insight onto the lifestyle in which we lead. And I'm not talking about the Instagram pictures and the houses and the cars and the shoes.
No, it's the travel. It's just the tough travel. Stuff. Yeah.
It's we were there for this amount of time and no day off, and we're traveling and we're going here and we're on a plane and then we're going to go sit in a hotel and we do it again tomorrow. But this is what we do in between, because that's the part that is still the most unknown. Now, mm-hmm. It's getting more and more tapped and people are trying to do it more and more organically. But what we have created as a podcast, like, new upstart, is that now you get a even more inside look. You get behind the veil because players are talking to players, and people that have relationships with players that they trust now get to kind of tell a different form.
Which is awesome. I love it. We've had so much fun with it, man. We really have.
I think players like podcasts too, because they can tell the story how they want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, sometimes you're telling the guy a reporter or you know, recorder, and then he gets to write the story how he wants.
Yeah.
When you're on a podcast or you have direct media, you get to say whatever, however you want it to come out, straight to your fans.
Yeah,
you know what
I mean? There's a lot less context, right? Taken out of context, because you get it. And one of the things that, and I think you guys are probably the same way, is, like, I'm not looking for clickbait.
That was the biggest thing.
Yeah,
man.
Freely, and then I'll let you listen to it, and anything that you want taken out, we can take out.
Yep.
Right? I know what our fans are going to like, and, like, I don't want clickbait. I don't want you to go have to answer questions because of something that you said here. That's not what I want. I just wanted a great relationship between you and the fans, mm-hmm. and fans to better understand you and your life and where you came from, and understand us as a group going out here working and going to battle together. That's what I think is interesting.
I totally agree. C and I have been on the same page with that. And I'll tell you a guy who, there's a great example of it serving that purpose last year. And ultimately it didn't work out, but Sonny Gray, who, you know, very talented pitcher, had an outstanding career in Oakland, got traded over, pitched well second half of his first year here, really struggled last year. While he was kind of struggling or started to struggle, we did an episode with him, and I cannot tell you how many Yankees fans I had reach out to me saying, you know, I couldn't stand this guy. Like, he's been so, you know, he's pitched so poorly for us. I heard him on the podcast. He's great. It made me want to root for him so much. His personality, and he was fantastic. Like, and it's like, oh man, I like this guy. Now I feel bad when he pitches poorly because I want him to do so well. And, you know, it can serve that function of just letting people into, you know, either your personality, your heart, your soul, whatever it is, and just giving them a real connection to you, because it's a format where, like, they just feel more comfortable to be themselves, right? Like,
they're next to their teammates.
Yeah.
Like, that's the biggest thing, is that your teammates. That was, like, the most fascinating thing about you guys starting that podcast was, like, the access that you can get, like, your teammates to warm up to.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, just to feel comfortable. And you're the vet. You know what I mean? Like, you know that, like, guys feel comfortable that you're going to take care of them.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, Judge will come on here because he knows that I'm not going to put nothing out.
Exactly.
That's going to be, you know what I'm saying? Like, so guys are more willing to be a part of it.
And,
like,
crack jokes and tell stories.
It's easier to get guys to come on.
Yes.
Because of the relationships you have with them.
And now you, and people understand, like, I think it was Cristiano Ronaldo is, like, the most followed person in the world, right? When you look at all of his social media combined, mm-hmm. right? And that's an athlete. That means their stories to be told by athletes. And I, you know, they're the shut up and dribble. It's like, no, influencers and athletes, like, these are the people that are really pushing the pulse of what's going on, not only in not just in America, but around the world.
Yes.
And so to have an access to them, and I think that's why social media is so huge, because I don't need to wait for an expose from the New York Post to talk about CeCe. If I want to see CeCe, I can go and follow him on Instagram, follow him on Twitter, see what he signs, see what he likes, see what, you know, if you're talking about, man, I think I'm just going to rewatch The Sopranos, right? And all of a sudden it's like, yo, he's a Sopranos fan. That's awesome. Like,
yeah.
And it's just like,
we've talked about
that. That's on a random Tuesday. Yeah, and it just, that's what's so cool about it. And I think the podcast, you know, just kind of platform just allows for that. So shout out to all the fans that follow and listen and enjoy the stories.
Yeah, it is. It's so much fun. And remember to rate, review, subscribe, all that. We always love that. So, Richard, what about for you, the one other question I was going to ask about that, because we do love the stories, is playing with LeBron.
Yeah.
What is like a good LeBron story that you have, you know, off the dome? I'm putting you on the spot.
But after that, I want a J. Kidd story. I grew up a big J. Kidd fan.
Okay. Okay. Give us both.
He's a fan too. He's a fan. Have you had some interaction with him?
You know what? I met him. I was in the fifth grade. He was a senior in high school. My dad went to go take me to see him play at the Coliseum in Oakland.
Okay.
And I got a chance to meet him there. And then ever since then, I told him that story. Yeah. We've been cool.
That's amazing. Stay on Kidd now. That's an amazing story.
No. Forget Bron. We got to know our audience. What you want a J. Kidd story?
Yeah.
Oh man, that is there's a lot of funny stories.
Because when you got drafted, he was already in the league for what?
He was in the league and he was playing in Phoenix.
Oh, okay.
So he was playing in Phoenix, and like for the podcast crew, like the first time I ever met Channing Frye was at Jason Kidd's basketball camp. That's how.
Wow.
Yeah, first time I ever met Channing. So I was a senior, and it was the senior year before I was about to go to college. So I was kind of working out. Gary Payton came to his basketball camp, and it was not far from my house. So I got picked up. J. Kidd gave me a ride home in his yellow Hummer. He had this trash yellow Hummer. but it was like the original. It was actually really, really dope, because that's just how we were doing it back in those days. Yeah, 98, yeah. 99. Everything was big.
I had the original.
The original Hummer. Yeah. That's just how we were doing. But it was like bright yellow. And he had like a bright yellow boat. He's like, man, the first time I tried to go put this in, I think they were trying to go to Lake Havasu, right? He didn't know what he was doing. Like, he's 20-something with a big boat and a big yellow Hummer. Everyone sees him pulling up, and everyone kind of stops and be like, yeah, let's see him back this. and so that to me was always a funny story. But like, that was the first time I ever met Channing. So somebody pulls me over and is like, hey, one of my buddies, you know, his dad, you know, and him over here, he's going to St. Mary's, which is a private school in Phoenix. You know, just come say hello. So I go meet him, and he's 6'9" already. He's taller than me. And I'm like, oh, so wait, he's like, oh, he's going to be a sophomore. And I was like, God. Oh, right? Gosh, I was like, okay. Yeah. And so fast forward years later, I'm recruiting him to come to Arizona. Fast forward years later, I'm hosting his draft party here because he gets drafted by the Knicks, and I'm playing for the Nets. Fast forward years later, you know, that's my guy, and we just spend a lot of time, and we're on the Cleveland team together winning a championship. Like, that's
amazing.
That's my guy. Like, used to sleep on my couch when he was about to be a senior in college, and he would just, because he knew I wasn't doing anything. And then after, like, so we would go out every night just because I wanted somebody to hang out with because of my schedule, and the next thing you know, like, I was like, dude, shouldn't you be working out, right? What are you doing? He's like, yeah, school's about to start. I gotta go. So we always have fun, man. But that to me, the J. Kidd stories. He had that yellow Hummer, and he took me, and he was just like, yeah, man, I had a big yellow boat too, like speed boat. I tried to go park it, and everyone just looking at me. Finally, so I think, man, I don't remember if somebody got out and helped him just kind of make sure the boat get in there. But it's like, yeah, sometimes when you stunt, you can stunt too hard.
Oh,
you can stunt too hard. You got to know.
That's an excellent example.
Yeah, you can stunt
man.
Too hard.
He, I mean. What he did for the Nets, and obviously, you know, it is unbelievable the way he transformed that franchise.
He's just a generational player. Like, that, you don't see it all the time, and you look at really what he did over his whole career, all those years combined, and winning a championship in Dallas, and all the All-Stars, and all the NBAs, and all that stuff. He was just, like, that guy that helped. He was the first person I ever looked as, like, as long as I follow this man, I'm going to be okay. Right. As long as I follow him, I'm going to be OK. Tim Duncan, like Tim Duncan was great, but he was also at towards the end of his career. Mm-hmm. Tim Duncan is the exact same way. If you get to San Antonio in the mid 2000s, like, as long as I follow this man, I'm going to be OK.
Right. Yeah.
I'm going to be OK. Work when he works. Study when he studies. Sleep when he sleeps. If you follow his regiment, you're going to be OK. And excuse me, you know, I play with Dirk. Dirk was, again, a little bit older. You know, Steph and Clay, I play with them, but they were still, you know, figuring it out, even though they were going to be very, very good. But, you know, LeBron was the next person that I played with in the prime of their career that was a different player. And you're like, okay, as long as we follow him, we're going to be all right. Yeah. Right? We're going to be all right. And that just, it doesn't mean you're going to win. That just means that we're going to have a chance, right? As long as I do my job, I know he's going to do his job. Yeah. And then if he doesn't, it'll be one in a million. So it's like, that don't matter. So if I'm focused on a million other things, I need to just be focused on my job. So that's what it was like playing with him and Jason Kidd were the only two guys. When I met Jay Kidd, he was 28, right? At 27, 28. So like, that's the prime.
Yes.
That's prime Jay Kidd.
Like, so, like, when whatever he's doing is what, yeah, you're right, yeah, what you need to be doing.
What you need to be doing.
Did you have a relationship with LeBron before you got to Cleveland?
We were on the Olympic team together, the terrible 04 Olympics.
Oh, yeah.
But it was more of like, you know, he was, our path, we played against each other in the playoffs. There was just a small forward respect there because we always guarded each other. And,
yeah.
And understand, like, we had battles in Cleveland, and then and when I got to my year 10 and 12, I started to become more of just a role player. So then that's when he like exploded to be the best player in the world. So it was never, the epic battles didn't continue. The epic battles were like when we were both really young.
Yeah.
Right. When he was 18 and I'm 23, like those were when the battles kind of for us happened. But then after that became role players. But I think when I showed up there, there was a respect of like, I'm not here for the glitz. I'm not here for the glory. I'm not here to talk about how many shots I'm going to get and how much money I'm going to make. I'm here to do one thing, and that's win a championship. And those are the people he likes.
Yeah. I'm here for the ring.
The two people he gravitates towards are stars that he can count on in moments where he's going to need help, mm-hmm, and role players that only want to do their job and do their job well. Right, those are the two people he gravitates towards.
Those are
the
two people he needs.
He
though.
Needs, exactly. but there's guys that gravitate towards players that like they like to hang out with, or they like to party with, or they like to go dinner, or they like to chase girls. There's guys that gravitates towards lots of different things, and it could be a mixture. You could gravitate toward guys you like to work out with and go out with. Yeah. You can gravitate towards that, so there's no bad way. He gravitates towards two people. People that high level guys that he can, you know, that's why the banana boat, and like he gravitates towards high level people, and then he gravitates towards guys that he understands will do the job that he needs them to do when they need him to do it.
That's a very interesting breakdown. How many years were you in San Antonio?
Oh, I was in San Antonio 2.5 glorious years. The San Antonio fans hate me. And the only reason why I know how much they hate me is because I just recently got on social media. And so
they go at you?
Oh, they go at me so hard.
Why?
San Antonio fans are mad?
When I was really upset when I left New Jersey, and then I went to Milwaukee, and I just didn't handle it well. I went through a breakup. There was a bunch of drama with my fiance at the time, and I just wasn't, I was in the, you know, you do this long enough and you have that year or two where you're just like, you're not even basketball or your sport just becomes your job, and it's what you're doing in between of your emotional problems or your personal problems. Like my grandmother passed away, like all this other stuff, and it's not that you were over it, but you're just like, I'm just going here, I'm doing my job, and I'm going home, and I'm being by myself, right? And that's the Richard Jefferson that the San Antonio Spurs got, right? And ever since then, I've been like overly complimentary of San Antonio as a city, as an organization. I credit Pop and Tim Duncan with helping me to take care of my body and understanding what I had it to do later in my career. But they're not. They're just. I think they saw the young Richard Jefferson, and that's who they thought they were getting. And when they didn't get that, they just become extremely resentful. I'm going to be really honest. They got about one more year before I start firing back. It's like, all right, y'all.
It's enough,
right? And it's not, but it's just like, this is the worst free agent since Richard Jefferson. It's like, that was 12 years ago.
Yeah, like, come on, it's like, stop.
Like,
come,
like, stop. Like, and it's just like, oh, yeah, blah, blah, blah. And you're just like, all right. And that's the thing in San Antonio. One thing that I think people are seeing now with DeMar DeRozan, and it happened with LaMarcus Aldridge, and it happened with me. It is very, very difficult for you to have success as a veteran, like a guy that's an established guy, and then to go to San Antonio. You might see the DeMar DeRozan in Toronto, but then he gets to San Antonio, and you're like, well, why isn't he not the same? Or you might see the LaMarcus Aldridge in Portland, and all of a sudden he gets there, and you're like, well, why is he not the same? It's very, very difficult to understand how to assimilate into that San Antonio Spur world. And credit to LaMarcus. Like, LaMarcus asked for a trade, right, at one point in time. DeMar DeRozan wasn't expecting to be there. DeMar DeRozan is still going through some emotional shit, people.
Yeah.
He's still going through some emotion. And it doesn't help that Kawhi and Toronto Raptors are playing well.
They're killing it.
Doesn't help because now he's also looking at, like, well, damn.
I could be there.
My people don't even miss me. The people that, like, that's the thing. And so, like, I give DeMar DeRozan a complete pass on this year. Now, that's not how it works.
He's still playing well this year, though.
But I knew that was going to be a wash this whole year.
Yeah,
though.
It's just hard because
the way it happened, and, like, he was pissed about even getting traded.
Yeah.
No less to San Antonio, but, like, just even getting traded, period, he was pissed.
And he used to literally say the phrase, "I am Toronto."
He literally would say that. That breaks your heart.
Breaks your heart, man.
First time, like, you realize that, we talked about this, the first time you realize that this is a business and not just a sport, and you love the city and the franchise, but then they do something like that, it breaks your heart.
And when the Nets traded me, I was the same way. I was broken. I was messed up. And because we went to the finals, because we won the 4 division titles, before we went to the playoffs 6 straight times, all of this stuff, and I'm sitting here like, and look, at one point in time, I wasn't communicating well with management because I felt like they had made some mistakes, or just I was kind of being a pouty kid at the time, but I wasn't being destructive. I wasn't being disrespectful. I was just more of like, hey, I'm going to work out here, and I'm going to show up ready to go like I have every single year, mm-hmm. right? And the only thing that made me feel better is when they started being real shitty right after I left. That was the only thing that made me feel better. Like DeMar doesn't even have that to fall on.
That's true, man.
And so it's like, for him, like, San Antonio fans, shut the hell up.
Yeah.
They don't make it any better. Yeah. Like, understand that this guy got his heart ripped out from underneath him. It's not that he doesn't play well. Truth be told, you can put that man in a park and he would want to play well.
Yeah.
He works out and he's one of the best players in the NBA. He's not playing great as well as he would like, because he is in a brand new place and understand, he got there at 19, 18.
It's his first city.
Yeah,
being
right.
The only thing he knew.
It's your first city.
The only thing he knew.
And you fall in love with it. The people fall in love with you. You get used to walking through the stadium and seeing the guy in the parking
lot. Yeah.
When that changes and you got to, it's a big difference.
You know where to eat the moment your sleep patterns all change, your travel schedule changes, where you're going change. There's so many variables. And so, like, I would ever come to defense of a player, because I think they're grown men. You don't have to. But just being in that same spot and understanding the emotions that come with it, it is a very, very difficult thing. So any San Antonio fan that does – if you guys want to get through – but understand this about – say this to the San Antonio fan. Tim Duncan is gone. Manu Ginobili is gone.
Tony Parker is gone. Yeah.
Pop is in his 70s. Like, you guys better start being real happy for everyone that you have right now, because I'm not saying that it's going to just dissipate once Pop leaves, but it's going to get harder to get free agents. Mm-hmm. And you see what New Orleans is going through. You see what these smaller cities are starting to say. So, like, you guys don't want to go. Look, you got David Robinson and Tim Duncan, and you guys rode that for a good 30-year run.
Man.
Don't act entitled and just – cut DeMar a little bit of slack, man. It is very, very difficult for guys to go through this, and you have to internalize it a little bit, because you can't just talk about how unhappy you are because he's got like 3 more years left on his deal. Yeah.
You know, we were talking about access before, and my favorite part of doing the NBA games on ESPN is the coaches' meetings we get to do before with just our broadcast crew. And Pop is like my favorite to go into because he
– Is he a good interview in
that?
Oh,
man. When you just sit with him, you would – love it. The stories he tells, you know, some of it's off the record, but some of it's on. What he doesn't like is questions that he thinks are like pointless, or like you're not really seeking a real answer. He doesn't want to waste his time, right? But if you ask him something that he does find interesting or engaging, he will give you the most interesting, thoughtful answers. And I like along those lines, like, because of this, I always love when I get Spurs games because it's just fascinating to hear from him. I'd also say he is very intimidating, just as
he walks around like Bill Belichick, just like, like, you get him, he's like, hey, and you're like, oh, okay,
yeah, like, oh, he's fun, he's nice, but like, you wouldn't want to be on the wrong side of him being angry. Like, I'm wondering, as you went through those years where you admittedly weren't as engaged as, you know, he must have been scary to you.
Oh, he hated me. Yeah, he hated me. Right? And Tim Duncan used to just he just used to fuck with me all the time. Like it was just like so bad. And Pop, I remember one time Pop was like, you know, because for me, I have a personality, right? Like my personality is going to be outgoing. When I become an introvert and is more when I get home. When I'm outside, you have to put on that mask and that space. But like I go to practice and it's like, dude, like I came from Milwaukee and we struggled. So we weren't playing great, but we were still 45 and 25. And it was just like we were still doing good. And I wasn't playing well, but the team was happy, which I've always predicated. But my focus is on how is the team playing, right? Mm-hmm. Yes, I wish I could play better. Yes, I will play better. Yes, I'm working to be better. But if the team's doing all right, fine.
Yeah.
But probably like, and you, he was going through the film, like just going through everything. And you're fucking walking around like a happy-go-lucky pogo stick, like nothing fucking bothers you. And I'm just like, I'm not supposed to smile, right? I'll tell you guys one Pop story. I don't know how much time we have, and I'm getting hot.
We got a few minutes.
Okay, so this is the Pop story, right? Yeah. So Pop, and you know he's notorious for his subs or whatever he's doing, right? And so he goes, he subs everybody. Or he had just subbed Matt Bonner had just checked in, right? So he was at the scorer's table. So Matt Bonner goes in, but Pop calls a timeout, right? As soon as like Matt Bonner gets into the game. He hadn't done anything. It was like a missed free throw box out. Matt was not involved. So he calls everyone off the court, right? He calls a timeout. Everyone sits down. He doesn't even go to the coach's huddle. He just turns and sits down, right? Now, Matt just checked in the game. So he goes down the line. He goes, Richard, you need a fucking rebound. He's like, Tim, if you don't fucking box out next time, I swear to God. And Tony, what the fuck? Get back on defense. Manu, what the fuck kind of shot was that? Like, what? And then Matt, who's sitting there, and everyone knows Matt had literally just checked into the game. He just sat beside. And Matt, you're just a fucking pussy. and Matt's reaction is like, what? I just got the game. What am I doing? It was so funny, and it was like you loved Pop so much because you knew it was kind of like your dad that was just like your favorite high school coach that was just yelling at you. So it wasn't malicious, but we all like that. Like once he got to Matt and he said that, we all kind of laughed.
Yeah, you crack up.
Matt was like, because you know he's pissed off. Legitimately, like Pop, you don't play around when Pop's like pissed off. He had relationships with certain guys that could do it, but he used to do. I remember one time.
Oh my gosh, that's an amazing story.
One more Pop story.
Well, we love it.
One more Pop story. So I remember like I was not having a good game. So like Gary Neal gets into the game, right? Gary Neal gets into the game and Gary's shooting. And so Pop comes back. Pop would yell at players on the bench for stuff that was going on in the game. So Gary Neal misses a shot and Pop walks back to the bench. You see that shot? I'd put you in the game, but you'd probably do the same fucking thing. And then he just walks off. Then he just walks off, and I'm sitting there like, yo, how am I getting yelled at? I'm not even in the game, right?
So you're responsible for his misses.
Yeah, I'm like, what the hell, right? So then afterwards, right, Gary Neal, we're like out to dinner. I was like, man, Pop spazzed on me today, man. It low key was kind of funny. So I tell him the story, right, and he's listening. And I'm like, yeah, and Pop's like, you'd probably do the same thing. He's like, Richard, you want to know what's so funny? I'm like, what? He comes and yells at me about shit you do all the time.
That is amazing.
He's like, he does that shit to me about you all the time. Because that was my first time. That was my first time hearing it. And it was just like, wow. Okay. Awesome, and that's the thing, man. But like, all that being said, like, I can't say enough good things about Coach Popovich and like who he is as a person and as an intellectual. Like, he would give everyone books. And put them on their chair, and like, you felt an obligation to at least open the first chapter, right? Like, yo, I started the first chapter. I'm getting into that. Like, you didn't have to but he wanted you to think more than a basketball player. He was one of those guys that wanted you to think more than an athlete, to be a different person. And he's just somebody that he would come in and ask you guys about, hey, did you guys see the legislation that just passed?
Yeah.
Right. And it was like, and again, you're to 18-year-old kids, to 19-year-old kids, to veterans, and just be like, hey, this is what it is. This is why this legislation passed in Ohio, and it's going to open up this for this, but ultimately it'll have it. And he wouldn't go on like a 10-minute like TED talk, but he would just give you a 2-minute thing about why you needed to pay attention to what's going on here in, you know, a former Air Force guy, just what's going on in the world. And he would put you in a position to understand like, oh, yeah, we're playing basketball, but there's some stuff going on in the world that I feel like guys should pay attention to. That's out. You know, like you had the Zen Master with Phil Jackson, and then you, like, who was just trying to get you into a mental space, and then you had Pop that was like trying to make sure you were aware of what's going on around you and in the world. And I like I said, I can't say enough good things about him.
That's awesome. Amazing stories. Yeah. RJ, you come back and do it again sometime.
I'd
us?
Love to, man. You know, I'm here in New York way too much anyway.
After we gave him his props, now he's
yeah.
Y'all
give
me props, man. Y'all give me props, man. I'm here wherever y'all want.
R2C2 birthed by Richard Jefferson and Channing Frye road tripping.
I appreciate y'all, man.
That's right.
Whenever y'all need me, man.
I appreciate it. That's Richard Jefferson. Make sure you download, listen, rate, review, subscribe to us and to any podcast Richard's ever involved in for the rest of his life. Peace.